The symbol of the judicial system is a blindfolded woman holding a balance scale. The meaning of this symbol is that our judicial system is blind to bias and fair in treatment. My next guest in his recent report reveals that, unfortunately, local communities have instead turned their judicial system into, well, basically a money press so that those cities and towns can have the money they need for projects, which quite often are preferential treatment for the few rather than fairness for all. Here are the details about the impact of all this on people such as yourself is Goldwater Institute National Investigative Journalist Mark Flatton. Thanks for being here today, Mark.
Thank you very much for having me.
And to see Mark's report and learn more about the work of the Goldwater Institute, it is the obvious, goldwaterinstitute.org. And I'm reading your report, City Courts, Money, Power, and Politics Make It Tough to Beat the Rap. And all of a sudden, that old TV show Dukes of Hazzard broke into mind. I'm thinking Boss Hogg and his little cops that were just rigging the system so that the boss can get all the money. Is that not too far from, I guess, in practice, what's happening here as far as politics starting to overrun the court and change its sense of priorities?
Well, the problem we have is actually, I think the 70s sitcom people, most people think of when they think of city court is the old night court with the friendly judge, you know.
Right.
Giving you a stern warning, but unfortunately, that's not really the way city courts work. And what most people don't realize is city courts are the biggest component of the court system. And certainly in Arizona, and I would wager nationally, in Arizona they handle more than half of all cases that go through the judicial system, and that's about 1 million cases a year in Arizona alone. And I'm sure it's pretty much the same breakdown in just about every other state that has city courts. The problem is in Arizona and in many other states, the exact figure is not exactly clear. It was about a dozen other states. We have a system where the city council appoints city court judges. Now, the problem with that is, one, the judges never answer to the public. And two, this method of appointment and retention makes city court judges vulnerable to political pressures. That might be to raise money, as you say. It might be to give special treatment to influential city insiders. Or it may be just to sort of allow these questionable practices of police and prosecutors to go unchecked. The Department of Justice, after the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson, Missouri, went in and did a detailed analysis of court practices there, and they concluded that the courts in Ferguson were largely a revenue-raising tool for the city, not a dispenser of justice. And if you look at the practices that were criticized in Ferguson, they're identical to the practices in Arizona and in city courts across the country.
And so, many of these courts are money machines, as I said. For every dollar it costs to operate some of these courts, their rate of return is 2.5 and 3 times on the dollar sometimes.
Absolutely. Some courts in Arizona, most of these courts lose money, but they're required by state law to have these city courts. But some of them are very aggressive revenue-raising tools. For instance, Tempe, where Arizona State University is located, it costs them about $4 million to operate the courts, but they raise about $8.5 million. There are other big cities. Scottsdale is another one that's a very profitable court. Paradise Valley is a very profitable court. Tucson pretty much breaks even, but they actually do make a little money. Even when courts are not sort of net revenue producers, let's bear in mind that the state law requires these cities to have these courts. So there's still pressure from the political branch to make these produce as much revenue as possible. And the only way the courts have to produce revenue is to convict more people, and to make sure that if you owe the court money, you're going to pay. So they'll use things like arrest warrants and automatic suspension of a person's driver's license, not to protect the community, but to make sure you're making your payments. It's almost like an extortion racket in some ways. It's basically telling them, you don't pay what you owe us, we're going to put you in jail.
Mark Flatton, who is the National Investigative Journalist for the Goldwater Institute, goldwaterinstitute.org. His recent report, City Court, Money, Power, and Politics Make It Tough to Beat the Rap, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. The outside looking in is hearing this before reading your report and saying, well, people do the crime, there's fines. which obviously the line of progression you're thinking logically, but it seems like the real tool of all this is the surcharge, isn't it?
Well, no, actually, the you do the crime, you do the time doesn't necessarily. I mean, that's a nice slogan, but the thing you got to remember too is that these city courts have jurisdiction over things like city ordinances, and if you look at what these cities have done, is they've criminalized just about everything. For instance, in Mesa, Arizona, it is a Class 1 misdemeanor, punishable by 6 months in jail, to spit on the sidewalk. It is a criminal offense to smoke a cigarette in a restricted area. It is a criminal offense to fail to return a library book. So on the one hand, you've got these cities that have criminalized virtually any kind of behavior a person engages in. And then all of these cases go to city court. Yeah, I mean, I know it's offensive, but I'm sure we've all spit on the sidewalk at least once, and probably most of us have been a little late returning a library book once in a while. And Arizona's not unique. There's a lawsuit in Missouri against a town called Pagedale, where where ordinances require you to have curtains and blinds that are neatly hung. So on the one, yes, if you commit a serious offense, certainly you should do the time and you should pay for that. But when you have cities that have criminalized virtually any behavior, and then those cases go to city courts where the judges are answerable to the city council, you really are set up to fail in a system like that. And then beyond that, you've got the problem of what's in that judge's head. I mean, one of the most fundamental things in this country is that if you are accused of a crime, whether it be spitting on the sidewalk or capital murder, you are entitled to a fair hearing in court. It's called due process. And that means that when you go in front of that judge, the only thing on that judge's mind needs to be making sure that you get a fair and just hearing. But when you have a system like this where the judge is answerable to the political branch of government, there's other things rattling around in that judge's head. That judge is thinking, well, what are my numbers looking like this month? That judge is thinking, well, is this the mayor's brother-in-law? That judge is thinking, well, you know, if I dismiss too many of these cases, I'm going to have the police chief go into the mayor. Those are not things that should be entering that judge's head. But unfortunately, with the system of appointing judges we have in Arizona and in many other states, those have to be factors in their head, because if they're not, they're not going to keep their jobs.
And this doesn't just affect individuals. Businesses here in New Jersey have come under laws restricting the size of a sign a business can have on its own building, or the number of neon signs a pub or a bar can have displayed in their windows.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, in New Jersey, the Asbury Park Press last year did a very good series on municipal courts there that basically came up with the same conclusion, that these courts have largely become revenue-raising tools. Others that have looked at these issues have pretty much concluded the same thing. And in fact, the pressure to raise revenue was so strong that in Utah back in 2008, even before the whole Michael Brown Department of Justice investigation, in 2008, Utah, because of this public perception that these were just revenue-raising tools, completely revamped their method of appointing and retaining judges. So now in Utah, a city court judge is still appointed by the council, but when that first term ends, then they answer to the voters through a retention election. And that's what a lot of states have. Basically, the breakdown is 17 states do not have city courts. And of the rest, about half of them have a system similar to Arizona's, where the city council does the appointing and retentions. And then the other half that do have city courts generally have some form of accountability to voters. And what that does is that gives that judge that protection, that insulation. That means the mayor can't go to the judge and say, you know, you need to get revenue up. Because at that point, the judge doesn't answer to the mayor. The judge answers to the people.
There really are just, as Mark writes about in his report, just really simple, basic answers that would allow the judges to do what they're supposed to be doing and to allow the judicial system to truly at this level represent that symbol that I described in the introduction. You can read more about this and learn more and maybe start taking a look at the court in your backyard and realize that, you know what, there are better ways than what we have in store right now. The report is City Court, Money, Power, and Politics. Make it tough to beat the rap. You can find it at the website goldwaterinstitute.org, where you can learn more about the work of the Goldwater Institute as well. He is their national investigative journalist, Mark Flatton. Thanks for uncovering and making us realize some of the ways that money just doesn't invade politics, but the judicial system as well. And thanks for being here today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.